crime is out of control, whether it's because of SB 91 or not. Mr. Speaker, I believe that this bill deserves a full vetting.
The fourth special session gets underway in Juneau. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Iditarod is dispelling weeks of speculation about an ongoing doping scandal.
I have never given any banned substance to my dogs.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you that technology for your home is smarter than ever. New devices and apps can simplify tasks, make better use of resources, and transform the way we live. Learn how to update your home with smart technologies at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's free smart home class on October 25th. Learn more and register at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
The legislature started its fourth special session of the year today in Juneau with two items on its agenda. One bill would make changes to the state's criminal justice laws, while the other would introduce a new tax. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on lawmakers' differences on the bills.
Of the two items on the special session agenda, there appears to be more urgency to pass the crime bill. The Senate has already passed the bill. The House moved quickly Monday to skip one of the three committees that was scheduled to hear it. Anchorage Democratic Representative Chris Tuck says passing the bill is a priority.
Crime is on the rise here in Alaska. Alaskans do want a fast fix, and much like the governor, I can't stomach going another day jeopardizing public safety.
Seven Republican House members, mostly from Matanuskas who sit in a borough, voted against considering the bill. At least some of these legislators would like to fully repeal Senate Bill 91. That's the state law passed last year that changed the state's criminal sentencing, bail, and probation laws. Anchorage Republican Representative Charisse Millett says the House should take more time considering what it should do regarding crime.
This is the biggest issue facing my constituents in Anchorage. Crime is out of control, whether it's because of SB 91 or not. Mr. Speaker, I believe that this bill deserves a full vetting.
The House Judiciary Committee has scheduled up to 3 hours of public testimony on the crime bill on Tuesday night. Senate Bill 54 would increase the penalties for Class C felonies and petty thefts. It also would increase penalties for people who violate conditions of release. The tax bill may face a more difficult road than the crime bill. Anchorage Democratic Senator Berta Gardner says the two bills are connected. She says funds from taxes will pay for behavioral health care, police, and prosecutors that will reduce crime.
We want a state in which Alaskans feel secure and comfortable and safe in their homes and communities, and we want people to feel proud, continue to feel proud of living in Alaska. We have to support it. Talk's cheap. Funding public health and public safety is not.
Senate President Pete Kelly, a Fairbanks Republican, says there are other ways the legislature can fund public safety. He favors a bill that would draw money from Alaska Permanent Fund earnings to pay for state government.
If you want to make that linkage, then what we need to have on the call is SB 26, because SB 26 funds everything.
While the House will stay in Juneau for the special session, most senators are going to reconvene in Anchorage to hold committee meetings. Kelly says that with much of the focus on a crime bill that the Senate has already passed, it doesn't make sense for the Senate to remain in Juneau.
And why is the Senate moving to Anchorage?
Just save money. It's save money and disruption. There's no reason for us to just be down here waiting for the House to act on a bill that we can do nothing about. We've already voted for it.
The Senate did take one set of actions today. It removed Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes from three of her four committee assignments after she left the majority caucus. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
After weeks of speculation over a top Iditarod contender doping sled dogs, the race's governing body has announced the name of the musher. Four-time champion Dallas Seavey's team had four dogs that tested positive for the banned substance tramadol, a pain reliever, according to a release from the Iditarod Trail Committee. On social media, Seavey wrote that he has withdrawn from the 2018 Iditarod race and, in a video posted online, denies intentionally doping his team.
I have done nothing wrong. I have never knowingly broken any race rule. I have never given any banned substance to my dogs.
In the video, CV says he expects further sanction from the Iditarod for speaking out against what he sees as a flawed process and callous mistreatment, including potentially being banned from all future races.
Out of the blue, I can be thrown under the bus this quick by the Iditarod, and they will do nothing to protect you.
When the Iditarod Trail Committee originally announced they'd found a positive drug test from a top finishing team in last year's race, it was in the context of a change to Rule 39 that shifted the burden of proof onto the musher, which ITC says is a less ambiguous and more easily enforced standard for keeping banned substances out of the sport. Officials say the way the rule was previously written, they did not have enough evidence to justify sanctioning the offending musher. But in the process, they refused to name the team in violation, fueling what race officials called unhealthy speculation about the incident. Earlier today, a group called the Iditarod Official Finishers Club wrote a letter signed by dozens of race veterans demanding the musher be named within 72 hours. President Trump is fond of saying Obamacare is dead. That negative advertising from the White House is just one of the obstacles Alaska's healthcare navigators are trying to overcome ahead of the Affordable Care Act enrollment period that starts November 1st. But for Alaskans who buy their own health insurance on the individual market, there's also good news. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin explains.
Jesse Menkins is a healthcare navigator and coordinates the program for the Alaska Primary Care Association, one of the Alaska nonprofits that gets federal money to help people sign up for insurance through the federal marketplace. Primera, the insurer, has announced a rate decrease for next year, and Menkins says that's especially good for Alaskans who earn too much to qualify for subsidies under the Affordable Care Act.
For the very first time, the cost of plans is going down significantly. This is new information to a lot of folks when we start talking with them about their opportunities.
For those who do qualify for financial help, Menkins says the discounts will be applied, same as before.
Nothing is really going to change how open enrollment operates this year. There will be subsidies available to Alaskans to reduce the cost of their insurance and their out-of-pocket expenditures.
But some things have changed, and they're a challenge for those trying to lower the number of Alaskans who don't have insurance. For one, the Trump administration has shortened the enrollment period. It was 3 months, now it's 6 weeks. And Menkins says the government suddenly cut funding for her program by 25%.
We finally have an opportunity to perhaps add some stability to our marketplace. But in order for us to be successful with that, we need to be able to get the word out.
And now they have less money to get the word out. Alaska navigators have had to scale back their marketing campaigns. The federal government used to help with its own advertising of enrollment periods, but the new administration slashed that budget by 90%. Menken says the navigators who work for the Alaska Primary Care Association have had to cut their hours, though they aim to remain on duty as much as possible during the critical enrollment period. And there's another challenge. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says it plans to shut down the healthcare.gov website for 12 hours nearly every weekend during the open enrollment period for maintenance. Sue Brogan runs the Navigator program at United Way of Anchorage, focused on Anchorage residents. She says the website outages will be hard for Alaskans who don't need Navigator help and want to sign up on their own.
We're really extremely concerned and disappointed if that is the way that will move forward.
In Alaska's time zone, the outages will hit during some prime evening hours. They are scheduled for every Saturday night except December 9, starting at 8 p.m. In addition, the government says it will have an outage on the first night of open enrollment, November 1. No time was provided. The department says the site was down for maintenance during the enrollment periods in the Obama administration, too, and for nearly as long. The individual market enrollment period runs November 1 through December 15. It does not affect most Alaskans who get their insurance through their employers. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
You can find information about how to reach the Alaska Healthcare Navigators on our website, alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Senator Murkowski talks about the challenges of climate change at AFN.
Our challenge is to improve the resilience of our communities now, not wait for the disasters to come.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here. And by support for Alaska Public Media comes from Raven Alaska, committed to customer safety and satisfaction, reminding Alaska that now is a great time to fly. Learn more at flyravn.com.
The 51st Annual Alaska Federation of Natives Convention wrapped up in Anchorage on Saturday. Delegates passed a number of resolutions and heard from all three members of the state's congressional delegation. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports.
AFN's last day saw a flurry of activity, starting with an informal and unwritten speech by Congressman Don Young. He touched on the history of AFN and some of the ills confronting Alaska, including social isolation that he says is the result of overusing technology. Young told the crowd one antidote from the dizzying pace of news and information is taking time to just visit with friends. And the 84-year-old says he avoids social media.
I'm the smartest congressman in Congress. And you'll say, how could he dare say that? And I'll tell you why. I've never Twittered, wiggled, or giggled. I have no idea what I'm doing. That makes me really smart as a congressman because everybody gets in trouble in Congress because of their cell phone.
Senator Dan Sullivan's address covered a number of topics, including veterans, the opioid crisis, and Alaska's relationship with the Trump administration. Sullivan counted off Alaskans recently appointed to prominent federal positions, including Tara Sweeney, Joe Balash, and Chris Laddick. And he described a high-level meeting earlier this year with President Trump and Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke focused on development opportunities in Alaska. Sullivan says during the encounter, Trump asked if he should scrap the last administration's executive action that officially restored the name of North America's tallest mountain back to Denali.
And Senator Murkowski and I jumped over the desk and we said, no, no, don't want to reverse that. And he looked at me and said, well, why? And I said, well, Mr. President, with all due respect to previous presidents, Alaska Native people named that mountain over 10,000 years ago. And by the way, that was the Athabascan people, and my wife's Athabascan, and if you change that name back now, she's going to be really, really mad. So he's like, all right, we won't do that.
Delegates approved dozens of resolutions spanning a broad range of topics. The body voted to change how it'll endorse political candidates in statewide elections, putting the matter before delegates instead of the AFN board. The native village of Savunga brought forward a successful measure asking that legally obtained walrus ivory and marine mammal products be exempted from state-level ivory bans, an issue coastal communities say is still hurting livelihoods. And a proposal from the Chiniga Corporation to transfer municipal lands held in trust by the state to local tribal and corporate entities was tabled and referred to the AFN board. Outside the convention center, a protest organized by a group called Defend the Sacred rallied against proposed development projects in Bristol Bay, the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, and transboundary mines in Canada.
No pebble mine! No pebble mine!
Between 50 and 100 people gathered in a light snow to chant, wave signs, and listen to speeches. Earlier in the week, AFN saw two major legal victories, with the governor signing a compact to give tribal entities more control over child welfare services, and the state attorney general also issued an opinion officially recognizing 229 tribes in Alaska as fully sovereign, recognition the state of Alaska has avoided for decades. From the AFN convention in Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
But it was Senator Lisa Murkowski who stole the show Saturday with a speech that gave special attention to climate change. As Rachel Waldholz from Alaska's Energy Desk reports, Murkowski wasn't the only one. This year, climate change was very much on the agenda at AFN.
On stage at AFN, Lisa Murkowski did not mince words.
Climate change is real. Climate change is real.
Murkowski said climate change is defining our time and told the crowd its effects are being felt across the state.
Newtok, Kivalina, Shishmaref, these are the names that seem to most make the news, but it's also our interior communities as well. Almost every village faces similar impact.
And she said it's time to take action.
Confronting climate change and adapting to it will take leadership. It will take partnership and attention to social justice if we are to find the strength to tackle the issue together.
Murkowski gave special attention to alternative energy systems being pioneered in remote communities throughout the state, saying Alaska can be a leader in energy innovation. Her focus on climate change puts Murkowski at odds with the Trump administration and many in her own party, including the rest of the Alaska delegation. But she remains one of the oil industry's strongest supporters in Congress. Just last week, she advanced a resolution that could be the first step in opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling, a victory she did not mention from the AFN stage. AFN gave prominent billing on Friday to one of the villages most affected by climate change. Paul Charles is president of the Newtok Village Council, which is dealing with rapid erosion and thawing permafrost. Whatever you want to call it, he said.
It's real. In my village, is in trouble. So what's next? We need funding, not only for Newtok, but other communities are being through the same thing.
On Saturday, AFN delegates passed a resolution from Newtok calling on the federal government to expand the definition of a major disaster to include the slow-moving impacts of climate change like erosion and thawing permafrost. The Obama administration denied federal disaster requests earlier this year from both Newtok and Kivalina, saying they did not meet the requirements of U.S. disaster law. That means Alaska villages facing climate-related erosion aren't eligible for the kind of disaster relief currently going to Houston, Florida, and Puerto Rico. Former Ambassador Mark Brzezinski says the Obama administration was considering changing that definition during its last weeks in office, but ran out of time. Brzezinski worked in the Obama White House. He spoke on a panel Friday. In an interview afterwards, he called on the Trump administration, or Congress, to finish that work.
It would be a great act of leadership on the part of our federal government to take a specific look at changing the definition of what is a disaster to help those towns and cities as part of reconciliation between Washington and the federal government and the Alaska Native community.
For her part, Murkowski didn't directly address the issue of disaster relief for rural villages.
The impacts of climate change fall disproportionately in rural Alaska. And our challenge is to improve the resilience of our communities now, not wait for the disasters to come.
At AFN, at least, many would argue the disasters are already here. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
One popular attraction on the periphery of AFN was a stationary bicycle that can light up an array of glowing electric bulbs. The Alaska Energy Authority hopes to take the display around the state to teach residents about energy efficiency. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove decided to take it for a spin.
This is the sound of the energy bike in action. The Alaska Energy Authority is involved in all kinds of projects across the state, but their mission with the bike at AFN is pretty simple. Demonstrate what it takes to light up a light bulb. Pedaling the bike generates electricity, which flows to a panel of different light bulbs. The more electricity the bulbs need, the harder the workout. So when it comes to lighting newer, more energy-efficient bulbs, the pedaling is easy. Older incandescent bulbs, which are energy hogs, make it feel like biking up a hill. Here's engineer Dan Smith talking to Tasha Moore from Amonic.
I'm going to start adding more light bulbs, and they're going to get a little harder. You feel that?
Uh-huh. This is my workout for the day.
Yeah, see if you can get this last one. There you go. Nice. Good job.
Okay, so how long do I do this for?
Well, as long as we need light.
The Energy Authority says this demonstration is a simple yet direct way of showing the impact of energy efficiency. Pretty soon, it was my turn to try and light up the light bulbs. That part went okay, but to really drive home the point, Smith plugged in a device that draws much more electricity.
Here comes the 110 volts. Are you ready?
Yeah. Oh, it's like that impossible.
That is a wall.
And then the lights can't even light up at all. Okay, I'm not Lance Armstrong, I guess.
Smith says he's worked on the energy bike display for about a year to make it smaller and easier to transport. Now, he'll be able to take it by plane to communities off the road system. So if you're in, say, Bethel, don't be surprised if you find yourself getting a strenuous and well-lit workout sometime soon. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Searchers have recovered the body of a Southwest Alaska pilot whose airplane crashed last week. Alaska State Troopers say the body of 31-year-old Kyle Stevens of Russian Mission was found Friday in the Yukon River. Troopers used a sonar system mounted on a boat to find the body in about 20 feet of water. Stevens left Russian Mission on October 16th on a flight to Bethel and was reported overdue by the pilot of a second airplane flying with him, who also reported heavy fog around the Russian Hills. Searchers found Stevens' maroon Cessna 205 in the Yukon River about 10 miles downriver from Russian Mission. The plane was towed to a bank. Troopers say an autopsy is planned. Anchorage has a plan to end homelessness, but its implementation is just beginning. And as leaders dig into the details of solving one of the city's toughest problems, individuals who are currently homeless are expressing mixed reactions. Ann Hillman with Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk takes a look at the basics of the plan.
Last week, Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz called together a group of community leaders from social service organizations, businesses, and statewide agencies. In his conference room on the top floor of City Hall, he explained that a lot of money is going toward helping people who are experiencing homelessness.
Even though we are expending resources now, we aren't making the necessary investments to turn the corner and solve the problem. We are managing the problem. We are simply managing the problem.
In order to solve the problem, he said, everyone in the room and the community as a whole needs to stop competing for financial resources and start focusing on collaboration.
It's about finding a way that we can use the resources we have separately and find a way of combining them.
Up until recently, getting people housing and services has been fragmented. Go to one place for food, another for temporary shelter. Organizations were working in silos. Housing was given out on a first-come, first-served basis to people who met certain requirements. Some people who stay at Brother Francis Shelter say they've been waiting for months and sometimes years for housing and have had to apply to multiple agencies. They just give up. Michelle Brown is the president of the United Way of Anchorage and has played a key role in developing the community plan to end homelessness. She says the new plan calls for something different.
You know, the heart of a local plan to make homelessness rare, brief, and non-recurring is tailored services for everyone's unique needs, because everyone has their own story and their own reasoning. You need housing stock. We need to have more affordable housing, and we need to stay with people when they're in that housing long enough to have them become self-sufficient.
That means more outreach to learn about each person's needs and desires so they can be quickly matched with appropriate resources. Though the coordinated plan is just starting now, the city has found housing for about 400 people since mid-2015, but it's too soon to say if all of them will be able to keep that housing. Community leaders at the mayor's meeting, many of whom work directly in the field, sat in small groups discussing what needs to happen before this plan can really be effective. Jim Norland is the executive director of NeighborWorks Alaska, which provides affordable housing. He says his organization doesn't have time to track what every other nonprofit is up to.
You know, I know what we do at NeighborWorks Alaska, but I'm not exactly sure what all the other organizations do. And somewhere somebody should kind of put a matrix together or something to figure out, okay, this is what all the organizations do, and then see where the gaps are.
The day after the first leadership team meeting, I went a few blocks northeast of City Hall to the Brother Francis and Beans Cafe campus. Most people I spoke to there had no idea there was a new plan for helping people get out of homelessness. A man who only goes by Birdman said he likes aspects of the plan.
What do you think about the idea of getting people into housing even before they're sober and just making sure they've got support networks in place? So treatment right there with their housing.
That works.
Yeah.
That will work.
But Birdman, who says he's been waiting for housing for 3 years, says providing highly subsidized or free housing only works on a temporary basis.
If we permanently housing, all we're doing is we're enabling them. We're saying it's okay, smack them on the wrist and let them keep going. No.
He says people should have to work for their housing. But Samantha Coyle, who is also homeless, says the city just needs to get roofs over people's heads without any restrictions.
If somebody's got their own place, let them have the dignity and respect to make their own decisions.
She says that will solve many of the problems and will reduce the number of people abusing substances. But she says if she were in charge of the plan to end homelessness, she would build more affordable housing. Lots of it. Luckily for her, that's already part of the plan. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Zachariah Hughes, Rachel Waldholtz, Casey Grove, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The Northwest Arctic Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Kotzebue, October 25th and 26th, at the Northwest Arctic Borough Assembly Room from 9 to 5. To discuss proposals to change federal subsistence wildlife and trapping regulations for the 2018 to 2020 regulatory years and other issues related to subsistence, the public is encouraged to participate either in person or by teleconference. For all information about the meetings, go online to doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. Contact the Office of Subsistence Management to receive meeting documents or to request special accommodation needs by 7 business days prior to the meeting. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we are grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.